Nonetheless, he felt uneasy the whole time that Mildred and JB were gone. He should be taking the chances, scouting the area. That was part of his responsibility. Besides which, movement would keep him warmer than he felt right now.
That Ank Ridge you talk about?
Jack indicated the settlement as they watched JB and Mildred approach. They had to approach head-on, with no cover to make use of, and Ryan was too distracted to initially assimilate Jack's question.
Say it. That Ank Ridge.
What? Oh. No, Jack. Can't be. Ank Ridge was a port, as far as we could make out. End of the river we opened up again when we blew the dam. This is just a little ville that I hope is on the way.
Why we not follow river when leave redoubt?
Set off in the wrong direction. No reason why we shouldn't have gone that route. Everything was wrong when we got out of there. By the time JB took direction and set us right, we'd somehow ended up wide of the river. Damn it. Should have got that right.
Shit happens. None of us were thinking right in that place. It was bound to screw us up. Thing to do is not let it screw us up anymore.
Shitload of things to put right, though. First thing is to see if we can get some proper rest and see the doc.
Ryan felt impatient waiting for JB and Mildred. There was something wrong with the settlement. It shouldn't be that quiet unless it was deserted. And if it was, then why? He wasn't used to having to sit around doing nothing. It rankled, made him feel irritable. When JB and Mildred reached the spot where the other companions were hidden, JB told Ryan of everything they had discovered while Mildred checked Doc. Doc hadn't deteriorated, but at the same time any progress was being checked by the conditions. She looked up to the sky. Clouds were beginning to gather again, giving the light a yellow tinge. The sooner they could move, the better. JB finished his report, and Ryan looked at the others.
Well, sounds safe enough if we get there quickly. Secure one of the huts for ourselves. Whatever hit them will do us more damage out here if it catches us than if we've got some kind of cover. And whatever wildlife stripped those carcasses will find us easier pickings here than behind wood or cinder block.
You won't find any complaints from me on that, and we really need to get Doc undercover.
With Ryan and JB taking their turn in supporting the ailing Doc, the companions came out of cover and headed for the settlement. They made rapid progress, knowing that, at least for now, the territory was safe, and within half an hour had selected one of the cinder block huts as their shelter. Dragging the least damaged bedding from the other huts, Christy and Jack cleared out the selected hut and put the bedding down. There was a wood-burning stove set in the middle of the hut, its metal piping chimney into the roof still intact. They selected the driest wood they could find from the damage caused in the settlement, selecting some debris from the troughs and from wooden huts, as well as the driest of the wood from the stores that had been ripped open. The windows in the hut that they were in had been smashed, so Jack and Ryan foraged for metal sheeting or wooden shutters, intact enough to be taken from other huts, and placed over the glassless gaps. While they did this, Mildred settled Doc into one corner of the room and went in search of blankets and clothing that was salvageable from the wreckage of the settlement. She came back with very little, but enough to give Doc a few extra layers of warmth. Searching through her med supplies, she was able to find some sedatives to calm him while the fever raged. On her search, she also looked for food and water. There were still some water supplies left, each home in the settlement having its own supply tanks, which had to have been refilled regularly by the inhabitants. But as she had suspected, any food had been scavenged by the predators who had stripped the corpses. She reported this to the others when they had completed their tasks and were miserably forcing down more of the self-heats, thus depleting their own supplies while warming in front of the stove. Mildred had finished detailing her findings and looked to Ryan.
How many huts did you count, Mildred?
There are 11. I counted as I searched them. Most of them looked like they had at least two people in them, so there were about 25, 30 people here.
Okay, so whatever came through here had enough force to take on that many people. We need to be triple red on this, but...
That's not really the point I wanted to make. I know the carrion out there was pretty badly mauled, but how many actual people do you think there were scattered around?
Hard to say. They were ripped up, scattered about, stripped.
But not enough to be all. Few bones, even if some taken by animals.
So what happened to the rest of them? Whatever hit this ville, it took a lot of them away, live or chilled. What the fuck does that? And why?
There was silence while they all considered this.
Not matter. If comes back, be ready to fight. If doesn't, then not matter.
Yeah, you're right, Jack.
No shit.
Ryan organized a guard, with Jack and JB taking first watch, before he gratefully sank into sleep. Mildred stayed by Doc. His fever showed signs of peaking, and the sedatives at least enabled him to get some rest. But she wanted to be close in case it worsened, and he needed immediate attention. Christy curled up near Ryan, but found it hard to sleep. She knew she had to, as she was on next watch, and it would be advisable to grab some rest now. But something was worrying her. Her hair rustled and moved of its own volition as she tossed and turned. It was nothing immediate. All the same, she knew that whatever had decimated this settlement was out there somewhere, and there was a good chance they would walk right into it. The cinder block hut was lit by a small oil lamp that Mildred had found in one of the buildings. As with everything else, most of the lighting had been smashed during whatever battle had taken place. Only this one item had survived, along with just enough tallow oil to run it for the night. It meant that they could save the batteries on the remaining working flashlights they carried. Although the glow it cast was small, and the smell of the oil was caustic, if any were fool enough to stand too close. Most of the hut was in shadow. The lamp illuminated the area where the sentry stood his or her guard, the rest of the hut in a pleasant semi-darkness to facilitate sleep. As the others settled, some less easily than others, Jack and JB stood silently, occasionally moving from one covered window to another to check the outside. The hut had four windows, two at the front on either side of the entrance and two at the back, evenly spaced. These were the long walls on the rectangular building, with the shorter walls being devoid of space, and there was only the single door. It had the advantage that there were only five entry points to guard, and the corresponding disadvantage that there were equally only the five exit points should they need to evacuate quickly. When they had reinforced the hut security for the night, they had made sure that one window on each side of the hut had a shutter that could be opened from the inside to facilitate the need to survey the area. Added to this, one of the two on watch would patrol the outside, returning at intervals, signaling to be admitted, and then replaced by the other. The night temperature was bitingly cold, so it was advisable to spend as little time as possible on the outside. A simple sec system, and one that worked well for the first hour of watch, with no event. But as they slipped into the second hour, things began to change. It was JB who first noticed, on his third stint on patrol. As the armorer was admitted after wrapping out the prearranged tattoo, Jack could see from his expression that all was not well.
Something coming down from cover, up a mile or so where the rocks rise.
Huh.
It hadn't escaped the albino's notice that the area to the west, where the beginnings of the volcanic regions housed some growth of flora in the otherwise barren rocks, would provide cover for anyone, or anything, that would care to bide its time before attack.
Ain't people. Animals of some kind, moving pretty quick, too. About a dozen, maybe more. Looked like bears to me, although all I could see were big bastard shapes moving onto the plain.
I take a look. How big?
Big. 500 pounders to show at that distance.
Jack's impassive visage showed nothing, but the armorer knew what was running through his mind. If a pack of bears in search of food had come across this settlement before, then that could account for what had happened. And from the havoc they had found here, it could mean big trouble. Jack indicated to JB that he would be back soon, and slipped out the door. Three-quarter moon. No surprise that JB had been able to make such a good assessment. To the west, the rising lands with ash, soil, and small gatherings of shrub and forestation showed as indistinguishable shapes that took on a malevolent mien with the knowledge of that which they had sheltered. But not perhaps as malevolent as the shuffling pack of dark shapes that moved across the gray rocks. Jack judged the distance. At their current speed, it would take them about 15 to 20 minutes to traverse the distance to the settlement. Their ambling gait was deceptive. They were moving at a rapid rate, knowing that now was the time to hunt. Jack wondered if they had got the scent of fresh prey across such a great distance, borne on the winds, or if they were only returning to scavenge what little carrion was left. They were moving as a tight pack, making it hard to pick off individuals as they moved, one obscuring another so that you found it hard to tell if two were three or three were four. Jack figured that JB's initial assessment was about right, but it wouldn't do any harm to take a closer look. The albino youth moved out to meet the pack, moving across the plain, using whatever cover he could find. There was little, but that didn't really matter. The bears knew he was there, just as he knew they were. All he needed was a clearer look before racing back to prepare a defense. One of the creatures at the front of the pack got wind of him. It rose on its hind legs. Jack assessed the creature. This evil-looking bastard was at least 600-700 pounds. Its fur was matted and bare in some places. Dark markings on its skin under the moon glow, looking like sores or scars. Even in the pale yellow-tinged light, it was possible to see the strings of mucus and saliva that extended the length of the jaws, dangling off the sharp incisors and catching the light to gleam dully. The tiny eyes, buried in the folds of muscle and fur, were dark specks that betrayed no hint of what may be going through that primeval mind. Jack slipped his Colt Python into his palm as he made his way forward. He knew that the weapon would be next to useless unless he could get a direct hit in a vulnerable area. They would have to use some serious blaster fire against this pack.
Shit!
Jack turned and ran, knowing that the movement would cause the bears to increase their own speed, to give chase, but knowing that he had the speed and head start to get back to the cinderblock hut with time to spare. As he approached, JB threw the door open. The armorer had been watching and was ready. Ryan, Mildred, and Christy were on their feet. Only Doc remained supine. He was awake, but weak.
More than 12, and more than 500 pounds. Need Bren take him out.
How good's your throwing arm, Millie?
I used to pitch in the junior league.
What?
Oh, yeah, right. I can throw pretty good, though it's been a while.
You got a good eye. That's what matters. Come with me.
JB glanced across at Ryan, knowing that he had assumed command of the situation without deferring to the head man. Ryan nodded briefly.
You go and do it. We'll get this place secured.
Let's go.
JB and Mildred slipped out into the night, while Ryan took a look around. There was nothing in the cinderblock hut to use to shore up the windows and door. They would have to rely on standing guard and using their blasters to keep the bears at bay, maybe pick them off. The walls of the hut had withstood the previous attack, but the windows and door had been damaged. Doc was out of the picture. There were 5 vantage points, and 5 of them, when and if Mildred and JB returned. He assigned Jack and Christy a window on each side. One with a shutter so they could keep a lookout on the action and be prepared. He would take the door.
Check your blasters, and remember, we need to make every shot count if we're to stand a chance.
Grimly, they checked their weapons, making sure they were fully loaded, and spare ammo was easily to hand for swift reloading. Jack had his Colt Python, Christy had her Smith & Wesson 38 Model 640. Both were good hand blasters, but would need real accuracy on a vulnerable spot to make a hole in the enemy forces. Ryan favored his Steyr. Its range and accuracy as a rifle would also help him provide covering fire, to try to pick off the bears as Mildred and JB made their way back to the hut. He opened the door a crack and looked out. Under the moon, he could see the duo advance on the bears, JB hand Mildred a clutch of Grens, then the two of them part in separate directions to get a better angle of throw. JB counted the frag Grens he carried with him as he and Mildred made their way forward at the double, enough for 4 each. At this distance, it was a matter of balancing the damage against wasting precious weapons.
Millie, you head to the left, I'll go to the right. Take it about 20 yards, count 10, then aim for the center of the pack. When they scatter, try and picket groups with the other 3 Grens. Now go.
Right.
Mildred's heart raced, feeling as though it was going to burst through her ribcage. Despite the cold, she was covered in a film of sweat. She could see her breath frosting on the night air. She ran steadily, judging 20 yards and then turning. A quick glance told her where the pack was and JB's position. He too had reached his goal. She counted to 10.
7, 8, 9, 10.
She pulled the pin on the first Gren, letting go of the spoon and arcing the deadly pitch high into the center of the pack, which was still advancing, and some of the bears were interested in breaking off and following the prey in their eyeline. The Grens that she and JB threw failed to fall exactly in the middle, landing at the rear of the pack. It was close enough to inflict severe damage. The 2 Grens exploded almost simultaneously. The fragments of white-hot metal scattered in the wake of detonation. 3 were hit full-on by the double blast. Their fur, flesh, and a shower of blood splattered over the rock floor and over the other bears. 1 bear was cut in 2. The other 2 were reduced to a steaming mass of fur and splintered bone, not even knowing what hit them. 4 of the other bears had lacerated flesh and scorched fur, causing the creatures to rear up in agony. They were confused, lashing out in blind terror and fury, their razored claws scratching at the animals in front of them. For a second, it seemed as though the bears would turn on one another, fighting among themselves and forgetting their prey, clustering in a way that would make them an easy target. But it wasn't to be that simple. As both JB and Mildred prepared for a second throw, a brace of the creatures broke away.
Shit!
One headed toward JB, but at an angle that would take the bear past the armor and away from the settlement. The other turned and headed straight for Mildred.
Oh, no, you don't!
Judging her pitch, she pulled the pin on another Grant and threw the bomb in a curve that would take it almost level to the head of the charging bear. Instinctively, as the Gren flew toward it, the bear raised its head, opened its jaws, and lifted itself to catch the Gren, as though it were a bird in flight.
Shit!
Mildred hit the ground as the great jaw snapped shut. The bear's head suddenly disappeared in a riotous explosion of bone, brain, and fur. The jellied fragments of the bear's head rained down on her, carrying with them fragments from the Gren. While this was happening, JB opted to deal with his own runaway. The others were still clustered in a group, occupied with themselves. This gave a few moments respite before they demanded attention. JB pulled the pin, let loose the spoon, and arced the Gren in the direction of the runaway. It hit the bear on the side, rebounding a couple of feet from the soft fur. The force of the blast drove the creature sideways, while obliterating one side of fur, flesh, blood, and bone. JB hit the ground to shield himself from the outer reaches of the blast. Only to find, when he scrambled once more to his feet, that the double blast had stopped the bears from fighting among themselves and called their attention to the source of the attack.
God damn it!
Already the bears were almost on them. To stay and throw more grins would be to risk getting caught by the angered animals.
Run, Millie, run!
They turned tail and raced for the cinder block hut as fast as they could run.
Fire blast.
Ryan saw them approach. They were making good progress, but the bear's loping gait was taking them a greater distance with each stride. It would be close, but there was something they could do to help.
Jack, Christy, cover fire! Maybe that'll slow the bastards down.
Ryan pulled the door wide, trying to sight the Steyr so he could take advantage of its greater accuracy over distance.